He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday, June 16th edition of the Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson and chartered financial analyst Barry Kite. And after I give you the market update, we'll try to address the question, what was the market celebrating yesterday?
Didn't last long.
Did not last long. The hangover is today. The Dow is down 722 points. It's under 30,000. It's broken the 30,000 line. It's at 29,946. The S&P is clear down to 3677. Boy, our inverse funds are doing well today. The S&P is down 112 points today. That's a 3% drop today. But keep in mind, we were up yesterday. The S&P yesterday was up about, 1.5%, something like that. The NASDAQ, which was up almost 300 points yesterday, is down almost 400 points today. It could not hold 11,000. No support level has held this year. NASDAQ is at 10,707. It's down 392 points. The small cap's getting whacked. Our little small cap inverse ETF doing well today. The NASDAQ or the Russell 2000 down 55 points today, or 3.2%. Even crude oil is down 244 to 112.87. I'd have to say that's fear of a global recession. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. How is the bond market? There may be a flight to safety today. It's up three basis points.
Yep.
3.43. So that's where we stand. Welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And we've got Barry Kite here, our chartered financial analyst. And my big question, Barry, yesterday was, after the Fed announcement of a hike of 75 basis points, and after pretty much indicating that that's on the table for the next meeting, what was the market celebrating yesterday?
To me, I can break it down to one sentence. I don't got the exact wording here because
stupidity.
that might be one of them, but
that wasn't the one you were thinking.
It was, I listened to the and don't forget we had this last time. So Powell usually says stuff and the market goes down. Last time, he spoke, market went up, next day we got what we're getting today. And same thing yesterday, it kind of hung on the point where he says, basically the 75 point moves, he doesn't seem, think to be a regular event, right? Meaning, I think the market interpreted that they weren't going to do another 75 point move, right? And really all he said was, it's not something that's going to occur regularly. Well, of course not. It hasn't occurred since, 1994, somewhere, 30 years, essentially.
Yeah.
I really didn't understand because I listened to the whole news conference and he didn't really, that one piece was the one thing that the market seemed to grab onto. But, when you listen to it, he didn't say it wasn't going to happen. It just says he doesn't expect these things to happen regularly, which they haven't happened regularly. I would probably agree.
Here's what I heard. Jay Powell said another hike of 75 basis points is possible in July. And obviously, he'll be watching the inflation numbers going forward. He's not going to say right now what it's going to be, but he did say it was possible. And that the market just took off yesterday. I go, okay, well, And today it has sobered up quite a bit and has now kind of digested what he said. And, you know, it wasn't really anything to celebrate what came out of Jerome Powell's mouth yesterday.
It wasn't really a surprise. That's
no.
The other thing. You know, to me, the market had kind of priced some of that in, right, already. And then the fact that, you know, unless they were thinking it was going to be 1%, that would be the only reason that you would think you would get what you got yesterday.
Yeah.
If you thought 1%, and consensus was really 75 basis points, and you know, he made the argument of why, you know, they got that data on Friday just before, essentially before their Fed meeting on Tuesday, which is why they surprised to the 75 basis points instead of 50.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back a few weeks ago, we never expected a 75 point hike. Okay, I look back to 1979. Okay, I was 4 years out of high school at that time and working, going to college part time or full time, and then work part time. We kind of went back and forth. The Federal Reserve, led by Paul Volcker, back in 1979, raised federal funds rates, which had averaged 11.2% in 1979 to a peak of 20%. By June of 1981, so they hiked by 8.8%, 880 basis points. The prime rate rose to 21.5% in 1981 as well, which helped lead to the 1980 through 1982 recession. That was a pretty bad one. The national unemployment rate rose to over 10% when interest rates got that high. Well, we're obviously coming from a much lower base this time, but that also may be a double-edged sword. You know, we may have more potential for even hotter inflation this time. I mean, only time will tell, but I don't really see, other than, you know, oil prices have cooled off a little bit. Is that a temporary hold? We're starting to see demand destruction. That is a big element, a big component of the inflation picture. So anyways, they took a bold step yesterday. There was one dissenter, one that wanted a 50 basis point hike, which he obviously lost out. And, you know, I mean, the cost of borrowing has gone way up, and that's going to really cool things down. The first hit I see, direct hit, being taken is the real estate market. Just a direct hit. I mean, all of a sudden, Redfin and Zillow are laying people off. I have a friend who's in the mortgage industry. He's looking at other industries right now. Maybe he should become a wheat broker or something. I don't know. But it's really cooled things off. The housing market, we've seen a top now. We wondered where that top would be. We're seeing rents rise now. It's going to really cool things off. And it really hurts the smaller companies. That's why we've picked on small cap stocks with some of our inverse funds. It really hurts the little guy who needs to borrow to expand his business, to buy equipment, to hire people, etc., to make capital investments. And so this is going to really bring the big chill. Now,
take that little guy, by the way, and play it to the high yield bond market, and which tends to be made up mostly, you know, a lot of small caps there, folks who, they're still, they're not, it's not like lending to Apple, for example, and SJB, right? I got a couple messages in terms of, SJB falling pretty significantly yesterday. And then, of course, right back to where
springing
it was
higher today.
Yes,
it's up 2.32% on 3x normal volume so far. Yeah. That is short. That is inverse the high yield bond market.
And those companies will have to at some point roll over their debt that they already have, and they're going to be having to pay higher financing rates at that point. And those are the events where you see eventually potentially more defaults, that type of thing. down the road. But
yeah, the other day, about a week ago, I was watching the Padres play. I don't know who they're playing that, but they had Michael Milken on. Michael Milken has totally reinvented himself. Michael Milken was the junk bond king, and he went to prison for the big leveraged buyouts, high leveraged buyouts that were taking place at very high rates back during that period of time. Of course, he's been out of prison now for some time. Now he's a cancer survivor, and now he's on a mission, I guess, to kind of redeem his life a little bit. And he's a big, big proponent of raising money for cancer. But that junk bond market imploded back then, and it could implode again. That's why we own some SJB, which is inverse, the junk bond market. Okay, when we come back, there is so much happening in the energy patch today. Wow, wait till you hear some of the stories I've got to tell. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. It's the Best Stocks Now show. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Our article was published late last night, and it is out on the street this morning, fresh off the press from Gunderson Capital Management. Go to SeekingAlpha.com, SeekingAlpha.com, all one word, .com. And then put in Bill Gunderson, and you'll find my latest article just published. And, you know, I mean, I look at the articles we've written so far this year. On January 11th, the real reason that ARK continues to sink, and we predicted it would continue to sink, and it has. It's down over 50% this year. We followed up 3 days later with the warning about short-duration stocks, and we compared SARK with ARK. Obviously, we preferred SARK. That article had 72,000 page reads. Actually, the first one did, 72,000 page reads. And, of course, SARK has soared since that article. On February 8th, 4 months ago, we wrote, "Here's why the NASDAQ continues to unravel." Were we right? Right again. And then we got pretty busy, and it was clearer up until May when I wrote our last article. I said, current consensus S&P 500 target prices are way too high. Were we right? Right again. And then we recently wrote about an important oil and gas stock in Europe. Barry, we'll get to the article. Natural gas prices are up 75% over the last 2 days in Europe.
That's crazy.
And we've owned an oil stock that is right in the middle of it all, okay? And then I have my latest article with an update on our macro outlook and how to create alpha in a down market. Go to SeekingAlpha.com and check out our latest article, which has a lot of our market forecast going forward and what we've been buying lately. Okay, now let's get to all these stories. There's so many stories. Bank of England raises rates by a quarter of a point. They seem to be going very slowly, and we'll see if that's enough to curb inflation in England, which is not part of the European Union. Now, here's the stunning, well, there's a lot of shocking stories today, but at the Atlanta Fed, GDP now predicts zero growth in Q2, which will end here in 2 weeks, okay? We had negative growth in the first quarter of this year. We have, I would say, an 80 to 90% chance of seeing recession. I think we're going to see a negative quarter in Q2. I think the high gas prices maybe will just squeak by with a positive one. But if Q2, the one that ends in 2 weeks, isn't negative, I think Q3 for sure will be.
Well, Brink, imports came in, high again, which, most of that first quarter GDP had to do with us, a record trade deficit with the dollar being so high. I could see, even if we're having, real growth here in the U.S., I could still see it getting a negative number because of the fact that we're, importing whatever we can get our hands on at the moment.
I'm going to stand by what I've been saying. We are in a recession and we're in a global recession. And then I gave the reasons why and the facts in my article that you can see on SeekingAlpha.com. Crude inventory rises unexpectedly. That tells me that maybe there's demand destruction, one. Or two, maybe this release of the strategic oil reserves is being done strategically to keep supplies up. But here's what you don't want to hear. You know what's happening to those barrels of oil we're releasing? Did you read that this morning? China. They're taking a barrel off the market for everyone re-released, so they are stocking up on their reserves while we're depleting ours. And the oil and gas stocks are in a slump. There's ways to hedge that. I'm not so sure it's time to flee, but if we are going into a deep global recession, obviously oil and gas is not going to do well. I mean, no commodity does well, except maybe gold in a deep recession. So that's something we have to watch very, very closely. At the same time, there's a lot of forces. It depends on where you're at in the world. European natural gas now up 75% in 3 days. As the Kremlin clamps down. And, that fire in Texas at that LNG plant, that's a big deal. That really is. That's 20% of what we produce. And, Europe was kind of like counting on that. But now you've got big problems. So who are some of the European players? Well, Barry, that's a subject for an article right there. Who are the beneficiaries of a 75% increase and the shortage of natural gas in Europe right now?
Yeah, Equinor being one of them.
Yes, Equinor was our latest article out of Norway. California fuel prices poised to rise further as refineries start maintenance. And their refineries are switching over from oil to the alternatives. So they're going to have a big problem. Their average in California right now is $6.44. And if that's not enough, living in San Diego, we used to go to the Colorado River a lot. That was our vacation, our getaway. It's about a 4 or 5 hour drive. We'd go to Lake Havasu. And the Colorado River used to dump into the Gulf of California in Mexico. It dried up a long time ago, and it continues to dry up. And if you haven't seen the level at these dams on the Colorado River, I'm talking Lake Havasu, I'm talking Lake Mead outside of Las Vegas, Lake Mojave, those are all lakes we used to hang out. We used to fish. We used to water ski. They have a major problem. The federal government is now admitting it. California is admitting it. They've got a major water problem and fuel problem in California. And you might say, well, that doesn't impact me. Wait a minute. We also used to go to the Imperial Valley a lot, my father and I. He would take me pheasant hunting. That's where all your fruits and vegetables are grown, in the off season, in the wintertime. That's where all your lettuce is coming from. Where do they get their water for irrigation? The Colorado River. Now, wait a minute. How about the San Joaquin Valley and all that? They're not as much the Colorado River. They did have the Feather River Project that brings a lot of water to them. But still, California is a major breadbasket, just like Ukraine is. What Ukraine is to Europe, California is to the U.S. So that is not something to take lightly. The drying up of the water in California. Many reasons causing that over the years. All right, this is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. When we come back, the refining crisis. Can there be any more crises right now? We'll be right back. And welcome back to the second half of the Best Stocks Now show. Now we turn to the refining crisis. The Biden administration solicited proposals to combat the oil refining crisis. You know, Barry, you can frack and drill and get as much oil out of the ground as you can, but if the refineries can't handle it, there's a giant bottleneck there. And the answer is, there isn't an answer. Tuesday, the CEO of Total, which is a big French oil company, Patrick Pouyanné, said, oil and gas companies that have listened to policymakers' calls for less investment in fossil fuels is one of the reasons for the current globally tight energy supplies. Shell alone operated 54 oil refineries in 2004. But in hopes of reducing the company's climate impact, Shell has cut that figure to 8 refineries. And by 2025, the company plans to operate 5 refineries.
Said ESG.
From 54
right
in 2004 to 8 refineries, and 5 in the future. Okay, so we can increase the production all we want. There's no shortage of oil in the ground, but there's a giant refinery crisis. And for a while, China, which upped their refineries while we were lowering ours, they were happy to take the oil in and refine it and be an exporter of excess, but now they've reversed that. They're not exactly happy with us, and we're not happy with them, and they no longer are exporting refined oil or gasoline. In addition to that, China has been a thorn in the side of consumers in another way. The coordinated global effort by our country to release more than one mega something of crude reserves in hopes of reducing prices at the pump, for every barrel of reserve that we have released or sold, China has taken a barrel off the global market, adding it to Chinese stockpiles, according to Kairos data. The stockpiling has mitigated any benefit to consumers from our release, but strengthened China's energy security.
And by the way, you know, they're purchasing it at a much lesser rate because they're buying it from Russia. So Russia's not getting, you know, 115 or whatever it is.
No,
a barrel.
They're getting a discount.
60 or 70, you know, whatever.
Yes, the last refinery to be built was during the Carter administration. So there's obviously been a lot of presidents since then from both parties. But, there you go. There's a major, major problem.
Well, and no one wants it in their backyard, right? It's the same reason we've had the whole nuclear deal, right?
Yeah.
In terms of nuclear power. No one wants it in their backyard. Of course, you've got, remember that we were fighting over the spent fuel rods, where to go put those, and you know, we were going to put them in, you know, some mountain in either Colorado, New Mexico, or somewhere, but no one wanted the train to go through their state. Like it was, I mean, it's, yeah, you know, it's, there's a lot of reasons.
Yes.
And they're long term. I mean, these are policy decisions that you went back to the Carter years, but these are, you know, whether they're recent in the last 10 years of, you know, offshoring a bunch of stuff, right? Making stuff other places. It's a collaborative effort over a long period of time.
Okay, now I've got two other stories that relate to this oil issue, and then one that relates to the solar issue. Okay, Exxon, they're threatening to double their tax rate on them from 21% to 42%. They also responded to Biden's letter requesting solutions to the ongoing oil refining crisis. And Exxon responded, in the long term, government can promote investment through clear and consistent policy that supports U.S. research development, such as regular and predictable lease sales, which, you know, that's been played around with quite a bit, as well as streamline regulatory approval and support for infrastructure projects such as pipelines. Okay, so, you know, I got two suggestions for infrastructure. Let's run a big canal to California, maybe from the Mississippi River or one of the other ones that dumps into the ocean, to help them with their water crisis. And let's open up the pipeline that would replace the Russian. It's already built, the Keystone Pipeline. But anyways, ExxonMobil agrees with me. In short, Exxon does not appear to believe that there is an excess capacity in the U.S. refining system. In other words, you can't just turn up the spigot. They're already operating at capacity.
Same thing that the Chevron CEO said last week, I believe.
Yeah. Now, here's the next story, which is almost unbelievable. But now they're going after West Virginia, the banks, okay? West Virginia's treasurer told six of the U.S. largest financial firms, including BlackRock, J.P. Morgan, Chase, Wells Fargo, that they may be prohibited from getting state banking business because of their perceived restrictions on the fossil fuel industry. In other words, they are going after West Virginia. Isn't that where Manchin's from? Isn't he the senator from West Virginia?
It definitely is.
Okay, so it appears that the banks are teaming up against them to boycott fossil fuel companies. So on the one hand, you know, you want help from the oil industry to, you know, drive oil prices down. On the other hand, you have the banks going after the oil companies to cut them off from doing business with them and threatening to raise their windfall. So you know what? There's not a clear policy here. It's very contradictive. And, of course, you've got, our energy secretary is a climate change activist. So you're getting what you want. We're paying what we're paying, and there doesn't seem to be any clarity. Now, here's the next one. Okay, this is the solar industry. The White House met with solar firms in a bid to boost manufacturing. They're doing the same thing. Hey, we need more solar panels. Now, I'm not going to do it today, but maybe early next week. I got back the proposal for my home.
I'd like to see that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever from a financial point of view, and it would only provide me with half of the energy to run my home. So, you know what? And, you know, one of the problems they're having in Europe right now, they had a very dry, there wasn't a lot of wind in Europe over the last year. And that's another reason that they have depleted their energy reserves, because the renewable energy was not able to keep up with the demand, that Europe has. So anyways, what I found amazing was First Solar. Here's one of the leaders, one of the granddaddies of all the solar companies. The virtual meeting with more than 20 industry representatives was designed to shed light on President Biden's move to bolster domestic solar manufacturing. Well, First Solar came back and said the meeting did not result in any alignment on the path forward and only served to underscore the concerning disconnect between solar manufacturing realities and the administration's understanding of key issues. So in other words, the CEO of First Solar is saying, you know, they just don't get it,
don't
how this industry works.
They don't know anything right.
So
well.
I just kind of scratch my head, but inside I'm pretty mad. You know, I'm just pretty mad, and I think a lot of people are getting mad. And I know Europeans are mad. 75% increase in natural gas as Russia turns down the dials. Who told them to take Russian gas in the first place? If I'm not mistaken, it was Germany's.
I think Merkel kind of had
Merkel
a bit,
cut a deal. Yeah. And now here they are, hung out to dry. And here's some of the companies that could benefit. Equinor is number one. Shell, number two. Vermilion Energy, NRT. All of these companies have to replace or try to keep up with the demand in Europe for natural gas. Now, here we'll close on this. The FAA proposes stricter climate rules for commercial planes, which they say will really be difficult. I'm sure if there was more efficient fuel, they'd be using it. But anyways, they're going to clamp down now on the airline industry to reduce carbon emissions. All right, on that happy note, the baby formula flooding at the Michigan plant. Abbott closes down again. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson and chartered financial analyst Barry Keit, where, you know what, we do use inverse ETFs. And I had a guy, I read some of the comments on my article here this morning, and this guy says, oh, well, now the market has bottomed, now that all these guys are starting to sound the trumpet on inverse funds. How long have I been sounding the trumpet on inverse funds, Barry? Well, I didn't start yesterday.
Yeah, and don't forget that's when he wrote that after the article came out, after the market closed yesterday, before the market reopened today.
It was a big day yesterday, and he says, "Oh yeah, now that Gunderson, you know what? I've been blowing the trumpet on inverse funds for a long, long, long time, and the walls continue to crumble down, don't they?"
Well, and they're just a way to manage risk. I mean, you don't have to be 100% long inverse funds, but you use them as a way to as a risk management tool.
Absolutely, and you know, we've used them quite heavily here in 2022. There's nothing wrong with picking on areas that are vulnerable. Okay, as we sit here today, and we say to ourselves, you know, we've had a 13-year run in the market. The economy has been expanding. We had all that loose money floating around during COVID. Well, the first most vulnerable area of the market, obviously, was the spec tech and the highly leveraged types of things that went up with all that loose money sloshing around. I would throw Bitcoin into that mix. I read that, Bill Gates yesterday called Bitcoin and those non-fungible tokens, he says they're based on the greater fool theory, which I agree with, okay? You can disagree with me if you want. Investors have made over 100% year-to-date shorting Bitcoin and other crypto stocks. So they've picked on stocks like Coinbase and MicroStrategy and Marathon Digital. You can't buy, there is not an inverse ETF Bitcoin. In fact, there's not a Bitcoin ETF, is there? Or there's one, Bito or something, Bit, one of the, there is one.
Yeah, they've came out with a handful of them. They're starting to add more. They might start adding less.
Yes, there won't be any Bitcoin pretty soon.
It's a fluid situation, yeah.
So you can short the individual Bitcoin ETFs, which are plummeting to all-time lows amid the crypto meltdown, or you can short sell if you can get any stock to borrow, stocks like Coin, MicroStrategy, Riot, Hut, Stronghold Digital, etc. So that's another way to do it. And now there's word of a big crypto hedge fund that could collapse and would cause insolvency. That would put even more pressure on Bitcoin. So that's obviously continues to be a very vulnerable area. But now with interest rates, obviously we've been inverse the bond market. TMV, for instance, or TTT is three times inverse the bond market. And, you know, I mean, if interest rates go to 5, we're currently at 3.4 something, that's going to continue to drive the inverse bond funds higher. Small cap stocks look very vulnerable to me because, you know, they don't do well when it's tough to borrow. It's hard for the little guy to get the money he needs. So we have inverse on small caps. What, you know, you can continue to pick on vulnerable areas of the market. And personally, I looked at 1,000 charts yesterday during the market run-up. You know how many I saw that looked good? Zero. Okay. I'm just telling you, zero. I didn't see one chart on the long side that looked good, and I looked at charts from all walks of life. And that's not a good sign, okay, when the market and individual stocks are that weak. That's one of the advantages to looking at 1,000 charts per day. You get a pretty good feel for where the overall, the breadth of the market is at. It's not good right now. So obviously there's still vulnerable areas and we're going to continue to pick on them. Real estate. You know, there's guys on, Seeking Alpha. That's all they write about is buy REITs, sleep well at night and get rich. Well, you know what? Real Estate Investment Trust went down 79% during the financial crisis. How do you think office buildings in New York do or shopping malls do in a rising interest rate environment or recession and people not really going back to their offices to work? How do you think some of these single-family home REITs, there's a lot of them, Barry. There's a lot of single-family home REITs.
Well, and that's who's bought up. I mean, like I said, we bought, you know, you've had institutional buyers.
They've helped drive prices up.
You had institutional buyers buy, you know, 20% of the home purchases last year.
So if you want to join us and pick on some vulnerable areas, I choose the most vulnerable and take action thereof. And there's more vulnerable areas coming up every single day. Now, I hope we put in a bottom. I hope that the economy doesn't continue to recede. But it is in recession right now. There's no question about it. So it's better to be looking for areas to pick on, vulnerable areas, and the gist of my article was, think of the alpha, okay? If you have something that like SARC that goes up 50% and the market goes down 10 or 15%, that's a hell of a lot of alpha. Alpha is just the difference between what the market does and what your investment does. So actually, there's a lot of alpha to be had out there in the market right now. And if things continue to deteriorate, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to pick on some of these very vulnerable areas of the market. All right. Well, I'll be putting out the newsletter tomorrow. Check out our article today on Seeking Alpha. It's our latest one. We've pretty much been right about the market here for a long, long time. And you can see what we're saying now and where some of the most vulnerable areas are in the market right now. Go to SeekingAlpha.com. Get 2 weeks of our newsletter. It's an education in and of itself at GundersonCapital.com. And give us a call, we will help you pick on some of these vulnerable areas in the market. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade.
Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.